The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Bills Mafia. We know there's only one topic every day. All Bills, all the time. And now Matt Bove and Sal Capaccio are going really deep, talking Bills all year long, because it's always game day in Buffalo.
Okay, number two seed secure.
Yep.
8-0 undefeated season at home secured for the first time in 34 years. Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And next week's basically like, okay, get your guys healthy. Everything was accomplished by the Buffalo Bills and their 40-14 win over the New York Jets. Also, by the way, they destroyed the New York Jets. Welcome into our post-game show. Sal Capaccio, Matt Bove. It's always game day in Buffalo. It didn't start off quite like that. Really, the floodgates, Matt, it was only 12-0 at halftime, and then the floodgates opened in the third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills take the ball first, which was interesting. I think there was probably a weather implication there. They go down the field, they score on a drive where both teams just took stupid penalties. The Bills go up 7-0. Obviously, they never trailed after that. It felt like it was a lot of self-inflicted wounds for the offense in the first half because of penalties that put them out of position and really unfavorable situations. And then for the defense, it's really interesting because the Jets moved the ball, but the Bills were making the big plays to stop them. So it's weird kind of how it all played out. But, you know, eventually, like you said, the floodgates opened and the Bills just really dominated this game.
Well, a lot to get to on both sides of the ball, but to me, I think you should start with the defense because the first team defense pitched a shutout, and anytime you can do that in the NFL, I don't care how it happens, that's a really impressive day. Sure, the Jets were able to move the ball at times and do some nice things. They actually, the Bills, I wrote down here, the Bills gave up five runs of at least 10 yards, which is not good. But when it came time for the Bills to make a play, as you said, they made the play. The defense over the last few weeks has been reeling a bit. Even last week against the New England Patriots, Drake May did a nice job in the first few drives. Any difference you saw in the defense this week, whether it was personnel, scheme, or just how they played?
Defensive line actually was getting to the quarterback a little bit. I think part of that is just because Aaron Rodgers isn't good anymore and he's not very mobile, but the defensive line was getting home when they needed to get home. I feel like that's the biggest difference between when we see good days from this defense and bad days from this defense. I mean, obviously you have the safety from AJ Epenesa. Von Miller has a sack. Ed Oliver has a sack. Greg Rousseau has a sack. Greg Rousseau has a pressure that he tips that leads to a Jordan Phillips interception. When this defensive line is getting home, the entire defense is, it's not like I'm saying some earth-shattering information. It is much, much, much better. When the defensive line disappears, that's when they run into problems, because when they do force third and not favorable downage, they give up more than they should because they're not getting after the quarterback. It's hard to count on your team to hold up for 4 seconds if the quarterback has all day and can find something for a 9-10 yard gain on third down. So to me, it all comes down to the defensive line, really. When they're going, the defense is good. When they're not going, the defense is bad.
Yeah, and to that point, you make a good point. I mean, they had 4 sacks. Every one of those sacks was from a defensive lineman, right? You name the names, Epenesa, Oliver, Von Miller, and then a shared half a sack from Greg Rousseau and Daquan Jones. When that's happening, and obviously on the back end, you get a guy like Rasul Douglas back, you get a guy like Taylor Rapp back. You can be a little bit more in concert, as Sean McDermott likes to say, marry the pass rush to the coverage. The secondary's helped, though, when it gets a guy like Taylor Rapp back and a guy like Rasul Douglas back, like I said. So having those guys back, I think, also certainly mattered to the Bills and what they could do on the back end.
Yeah, definitely. And it feels like the one thing I'll give the defense credit about is that they have this season started games poorly and been able to respond and adjust at a pretty consistent rate. That's a good sign, right? How many times have you watched the Bills give up an early touchdown or an early couple touchdowns to a team and go, this game is over, and then the defense starts to tighten up and the offense wakes up or bails them out? We've seen that happen a lot, and I feel like today was a good sign because they got there quicker than they have in the past. They got there probably on their second or third defensive possession, where the Jets were able to move the ball, but then they were able to make the big plays. The one thing that scares me a bit, besides the defensive line, is their, I guess, reliance on turnovers in big plays defensively, because I feel like that well will run dry at some point, and then you need to just flat out stop a team and try and get them off the field. And that's a bit of a concern for me. Like, does this game look different if Aaron Rodgers doesn't throw it at his tight end's knees on third and one, and then they make the stop on fourth and one? Does this game look different if Greg Rousseau doesn't tip that one pass and Jordan Phillips intercepts it? I know these are a lot of ifs, because to the Bills' credit, they made the plays, but they're going to go against much better competition in a week.
Yeah, I said the same thing, if you remember, a few weeks ago. That was my concern when they gave up all those points to the Rams and the Lions. I said the exact same thing, which is when they didn't get a turnover and they weren't forcing teams to punt. So how are you getting the ball back, right? Yeah. And that was a big concern. I agree with you. It has been the calling card of the defense, though, and so far way better than not in that department. Another three turnovers for the defense in this game. All right, speaking of turnovers, let's get to a couple notes in this game. How about Christian Benford? He almost has one early on, and then he does a great job to undercut Alan Lazard for an interception. Great to see him be rewarded after the year he's had.
Yeah, you know, we're now part of a club, Christian Benford and I, a pretty exclusive club. Uh-oh. The shoved by Aaron Rodgers club is now something
I love that
Christian Benford and I both have in common. Uh-huh. So yeah, I mean, just a really good play on the ball. I forgot who pointed it out on social media, but a nice observation of on the Christian Benford interception, it looked like Cole Bishop had his guy locked up, which forced Rodgers onto his next read, which was trying to force it in to beat Benford, and he jumped the route and made the play. Yeah. I think there's an argument to be made that he is an all-pro. We were talking about this after the game with some of my colleagues. I don't know if he's got the numbers that like make you think all-pro, but he has just been so consistently impressive. And today was another example.
Let me ask you a question. Okay. Do you think there's an argument to be made after what you've seen over the last few weeks that Cole Bishop should be starting over DeMar Hamlin?
Ooh, I don't know if I've seen enough. I've liked it at times, but I don't know if I've seen enough to say, okay, it's time to make the switch. And I don't think they would make the switch at this point in the season. Do you?
I don't, but here's what I do like. They move Cole down in the box. He can really do well in run support. That's helped him, I think, there. He did get beat late. Backups were in, so I don't know how much, you know, with the tight end, so I don't know how much that would matter. But so I agree with that. I don't think they're going to, but it feels like he's just getting better, you know, and he can help out in a lot of different areas on the defense. The defensive line, speaking of the pressure, they also have now interceptions. Austin Johnson with two on the year. Now Jordan Phillips with the one. Why did Jordan Phillips not run? Did anybody catch up with him in the locker room? He was gone by the time I got there.
I don't know why he didn't run, but hey, bite off more than you can chew, right? Like, just get down and give the ball back to probably the league MVP. Do not try and go make a play and let them pop that ball out somewhere.
All right, and then two other things real quick. Sean McDermott said he thought that Matt Milano played a good game. Milano was the he recovered a fumble and almost had a touchdown. If it wasn't for Rodgers sliding and touching him while they were both on the ground together, Milano would have had a fumble return for a touchdown. I didn't think that anything stood out necessarily good or bad, Milano specifically in this game, to say, oh, yeah, he's definitely, you know, the guy and back, and he should be playing over Dorian, or the fact I also wouldn't say the other way and like, oh, my God, he struggled, which I think is a good sign.
There was one play where he got beat. It would have been a really tough tackle. I don't remember if it was Devontae Adams or if it was Garrett Wilson. It might have been Devontae Adams. Like a little screen pass where he definitely was a step slow and kind of missed the tackle, and it turned into like a 10 or 15 yard gain. But that's a tough open field tackle against a really good player, whatever wide receiver it was. But then, you know, the explosiveness to be able to jump up, that's what Matt Milano has always been, right? An explosive play guy.
Yep.
And that's a difference, right? Like that ball, they pick up the fumble, they get it, and then they turn it into points. If the Jets recover that, you know, at that point, the game is still probably out of reach. But obviously, that lets the avalanche kind of continue as far as the Bills are concerned. I still probably want to see a bit more from him, but I don't think I would make a change either. Like, I don't think I would put Dorian in. I think they just trust Milano so much.
That word trust, right? And we'll see. And then I don't know what next week brings, though, which we're going to talk about a little bit, but I don't know if that's a spot you want to put Milano in, you know, if you're trying to, you know, give guys a little bit of a rest here. Oh, and finally on defense, I don't know if you saw my tweet. I tweeted about this before we came on. You know who led the Bills in tackles today, Sunday?
Ooh, this is a fun question because I have no idea. I mean, it's always a safe bet to say like Terrell Bernard or something, but the fact that you're asking me probably makes me think that it's not him. I'm thinking this is interesting, and it wouldn't have been Milano because you would have said Milano if you were connecting the dots. I am going to go with Taron.
The Bills' leading tackler with 8 was also a young man who went out for the opening coin toss as a captain, who's from Lancaster, New York, who played one quarter. Joe Andreessen.
Guy just makes tackles. Guy just makes plays.
He played one quarter, and he had 8 tackles on defense.
Good for him. That's really, really cool. I love
that. It's amazing.
And it was cool because he was also, you know, like you said, being a captain at your home stadium in the regular season finale is just such a cool thing. And, you know, I hope his journey continues for years and years and years. But obviously, we all know about this league and the longevity of a lot of careers. So just an unbelievable story and a really, really cool series season for the Lancaster native.
All right. So let's get to the offensive side. Big picture, small picture, Josh Allen. Let's talk about the small picture and make it into the big picture, obviously, which is MVP. Mm-hmm. But the small picture, the game itself, less than 60% passing, but I didn't think he played a bad game at all. He's very efficient, actually, even more so than I thought the numbers suggested as far as, you know, completion percentage is concerned. Seemed like it was a day of big plays for Josh, actually, where he found Amari Cooper for an amazing catch. He found Keon Coleman for an amazing throw and catch. Uh-huh. And, you know, he obviously ran one in as well. I thought Josh played a good game. I thought he kept the offense on schedule. And I have no issue with the 59% completion percentage because he more than made up for it with all the big plays he made to keep the team where it needed to be, including, by the way, going 57%, I believe it was, total on third down.
Yeah, and also that number should be way higher because there are like 5 plays I can point to that should have counted as, not should have counted, should have been caught. Some of his incomplete passes today were more spectacular than his completions. I think about the one, the most impressive one is the rolling to the right where he throws it to Keon Coleman. And I posted like that's got to be a catch from Keon Coleman and got a little bit of backlash because it was like, yeah, it was a really hard catch. Well, he's an NFL receiver and I want to see an NFL receiver make that catch because Josh buys like 6 seconds rolling to his right and throws it 35 yards down the field and gets it in a position where he can make the catch. So you've got that play. There's a play at the end of the first half where Josh is basically getting sacked and he's getting hit in his left knee and still throws a pass to Shakir that probably should have been caught. There was another slant to Keon Coleman that should have definitely been caught that basically just hit his hands and fell. And there was the deep pass to Coleman down the sideline that he caught, but that turned into a, you know, wiped out play because of a holding penalty, I think on like Spencer Brown or something. So there were a lot of plays where I feel like his numbers would have been more inflated, but I think that he was, you know, really, really good again today.
And obviously the next question is about the MVP because we're pretty sure this is the last chance he'll have today, Sunday, that we record this after the game to really build on any numbers. Whatever he does next week, he might sit, he might play a little bit. He's not going to be throwing the ball around the yard, I think, for the whole game, obviously.
Yeah.
Did anything change in your mind? You're on the record saying he's the MVP. Mm-hmm. Did anything change in your mind this week after watching this performance?
Well, going into the game, if you're a betting person, he was about minus 225, I believe, at some of the sports books. So he was still a decent size favorite. Now, the MVP, as we've discussed on the podcast several times, very much a narrative award. What have you done for me lately? I think a 3-touchdown performance will essentially put him a little bit more ahead than he was. I don't think that it is locked up, but I think he will be okay. He was minus 225 going into the game. Maybe he's minus 350 or something going into the last
game. I know you know this, but I want to make sure everybody else understands this.
Yes.
When Matt says betting line favorite, he's a little ahead. There's no like, we don't know. There's no like the Russian judge and the German judge are all putting up scorecards and we're keeping a tally here. These are literally just betting markets that could totally be wrong. We have no idea. It's them guessing by what they think the voters are going to do.
Sure, but yes, but also sports books don't ever like just hand out money, which makes me think like there's got to be some sort of like a trend or bit of knowledge that they are aware of.
I just want listeners to understand when we say it, there's no like we don't know for sure
that
most voters are going to vote for Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it is only a regular season award and we won't find out though until the week of the Super Bowl because that's when NFL honors happens. The thing though that you know what happens and look at I'm at the game, I'm on the sidelines, I mean I'm calling the game. I'm not reading social media during the game whatsoever. I'm not reading. I'm really not reading it after the game very much at all. The little bit that I turned on after the game got me upset again. And the reason why is, of course, it becomes this, let's find a way to trash Josh Allen if you don't want him to win the award type of situation. And I just don't see the need why this is where we are now. And it just sucks. It really does.
Well, that's social media. And a lot, you know, it's funny. Like, I obviously am a little bit of a different generation. I'm in like the social media era, that it is something that is so second nature to me. Like, I was on Twitter and Instagram when I was graduating high school and early on in college. So these have been like platforms that have been around for so long. But it is tiresome because it does turn into just a mudslinging contest between the fan bases and the players. And that's not what it should be. And that's just kind of the world that we live in now with a lot of different topics. I think that he's going to win because I think there's a couple different factors here. I think that even though there shouldn't be, there is a little bit of MVP fatigue. Like, a writer will say, hey, last year I voted for Lamar, but the more I've thought about it, maybe it should have been Josh. So this year, maybe it should be Lamar, but I'm going to give it to Josh. I've always thought, though, if the numbers were relatively close in the end, the Josh Allen eye test spectacular plays will kind of rise to the top. And Lamar has them, for sure, just as much as Josh. But, you know, Josh Allen diving in the snow to the pylon against the 49ers, Josh Allen running into the end zone against the Chiefs, Josh Allen going on the road and putting up 48 points against the Lions. There have been those big moments. So I do think he's going to win it, and I do think he will become a bigger favorite to win it after what we saw happen today.
And not that you would expect any different from any of his teammates, but it was also maybe more emphatic than you might think. Like, they were very much on the, like, when we asked teammates in the locker room after the game about Josh and MVP, you didn't get any, hey, you know what? Both guys are great. And, you know, we, of course, we'd love to see Josh win. Nothing like that. What you got was, oh, it's Josh Allen and you can't tell me otherwise. That's what you got from pretty much anybody.
Yeah, I just looked it up, actually. This was updated 15 minutes ago, it looks like. Josh Allen, as of right now, is about a minus 300 to a minus 350 favorite. So if you're not a betting person, that means for you to win $100, you would have to bet $350. For comparison, Lamar Jackson is plus 250-ish at most places, which means if you bet $100, you would win $250. So Josh is a pretty sizable MVP as far as like the betting markets are concerned. But yeah, to your point, like, it's just become ridiculous. I did find it interesting, though, like Sean going out of his way in his opening comments to make a comment. I told this to some of my friends in a group message today. Tell me if you disagree with this or not. They were asking me about Josh and like what kind of day I thought he was going to have. I told them that I think the Bills were more thinking about Josh getting the MVP today than they were thinking about getting the two seed today. I think they care about Josh winning the MVP that much. I really do.
Yeah, I think that it's a big deal for them. I loved your interview with Spencer Brown on Friday about it, and that you posted on social and at WKBW. I agree that it meant a lot. It means a lot. I've said this for a while. For anybody who says, well, who cares? It doesn't mean anything. It does. It means something to people. It doesn't mean more than a Super Bowl, but it means a lot to people. It means a lot to his teammates. It means a lot to his coaches, his organization, the fan base, to Josh Allen. And it should mean a lot. It's an incredible, incredible, one of the greatest awards you could win, individual awards in all team sports, right? The MVP of the greatest, you know, most watched sport in the world, in North America. I mean, it's incredible. So that's why I do think it matters. All right.
It's a legacy thing. It yes, really is.
It's, like, it is. It's 100%.
It's exactly very much, right. It's a legacy thing. And you here in Buffalo, or if you were a Bills fan watching this, wherever you are, know how spectacular Josh Allen is. But in 15, 20 years, when you're explaining to your kid or your grandkid or somebody who doesn't know a ton about football, whatever it is, about what kind of player Josh Allen is, you can be like, yeah, the 1 year he won MVP. The reason I know how good Thurman Thomas was is because of, ooh, Jaden Daniels just took a really scary looking hit, but he got up, so that's okay. The reason I know how good Thurman Thomas was because, hey, he won an NFL MVP. Yes. Like, that is absolutely ridiculous. So to me, I think that matters. I also think, not for anything, I think he's a Hall of Famer anyway, but he gets an MVP. He's probably like a first ballot Hall of Famer, regardless of what else happens in his career. I mean, he tied Thurman Thomas rushing touchdowns today with 65. He has as many rushing touchdowns as Buffalo Bills Hall of Fame running back Thurman Thomas now.
All right. A couple of things I want to get to on the offensive side real quick. They didn't run the ball particularly great.
No,
the Bills they did this game. Their numbers weren't now, but I don't think that they were like, if you watch the game, there were times where like, okay, yeah, they're running the ball. They're putting themselves in decent position because James Cook, Had 15 carries for 53 yards, only 3.5 yards a carry. Josh Allen only ran 3.4 yards a carry. Ty Johnson only four. And then in the fourth quarter, when they had to try and close it out, Ray Davis, Reggie Gilliam, total of 8 carries for 12 yards. So they have to be better at running the ball. And this is a very good Jets defense. We know that. But they do have to be a bit better running the ball. On the other side, as we said, they didn't stop the run particularly well. You know, a lot of that was in the fourth quarter as well when backups are in. But we can also look at a couple of guys who made some big plays. We just said Amari Cooper, Keon Coleman, and how about Tyrell Shavers? Getting a chance, Matt, so to come in the fourth quarter. A 69-yard touchdown catch and run. Absolutely awesome for Tyrell Shavers, who's worked his butt off to get an opportunity.
What a cool thing to have as your first catch, right? When he is talking to his kids and grandkids one day about his time in the NFL, he'll be like, you know, my first catch was a 69-yard touchdown to the house. Like, that is a really cool thing. My favorite thing about the Tyrell Shavers play is watching the sideline react to it. Because I do think that that kind of paints a picture to the type of team we have talked about this year and just how close they are. Josh Allen losing his mind on the sideline as Tyrell Shavers comes back and they celebrate. Like, that's not common for the guy who we just talked about as the MVP frontrunner to be getting that excited about a practice squad call-up wide receiver. So it is very cool to see how they reacted to that in a very amazing moment for him and his family.
No doubt. Very cool. Anything else on the, you know what, real quick, special teams actually had a good day.
Yeah.
And they have not been very good lately. Tyler Bass was 5 for 5 kicking field goals and had an extra point. Mm-hmm. He was perfect on the day total. And then Sam Martin had a punt that landed at the 5-yard line that turned into a safety, basically. Mm-hmm. Great job of him. He also had another one that was a 51-yard punt. They didn't make any mistakes on special teams, which is a win after the last few weeks. They did allow, I think, one longer punt or kick return either way, but you'd like to button that up a little bit. But that was a nice thing to see because this team can't let you, if there's going to have, they're going to be close games in the playoffs. They have to find a way to win the special teams battle in those close games.
Yeah, definitely. I liked what I saw from the special teams game today, especially. It was windy. You're down there. It was a windy day. So to be able to kind of go status quo and make some nice plays, especially punting, I think is a really good sign for them. I think just top to bottom. Offense, better than the Jets. Defense, better than the Jets. Special teams, better than the Jets, which is why it was at one point in this game 40-0.
That's right. Okay. Before we head on out of here, and we'll do our best here. I actually have another radio interview to do as Matt and I are recording here. So yeah. If we go a little bit long on this, Matt can kind of wrap it up. So let me just make sure I get to what's going to happen in week number 18 and then into the playoffs. Now, as Matt and I talk to you here, it is close to 9 p.m. on Sunday night. We do not know the week 18 schedule yet. I'm going to guess they're going to play Sunday at 1 p.m. That is completely a guess, though, because the game doesn't mean anything, and I can't imagine the NFL would put the Bills and Patriots on a Saturday national window on NFL Network, especially thinking Josh Allen might not play. Why would we do that, right? Can't see that.
Yeah, the only thing that's interesting here is that both teams probably – well, not both teams want to lose, but actually you could make the argument of that because if the Patriots lose, they secure the number one overall pick. I would imagine the Bills don't want the Patriots to get the number one overall pick. So it actually might be advantageous for them to lose regardless of who is out there playing. I'm guessing Sunday 1 o'clock. And because of the scenarios, I think we see Broncos, Chiefs, Dolphins, Jets, and then Bengals, Steelers all in the 4:25 window. That's my guess. Just because then all of them would be playing at the same time to see who gets into the playoffs the following week.
I think there's almost no doubt. We're going to know this in a couple hours. By the time people listen to this, they're going to know the answer. I'm going to predict it. It's got to be Vikings Lions for the Sunday night game because that's for the number one seed. I think the question is what happens Saturday more than anything. What games do they put on Saturday?
I think
it could be Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, but
That's what I was going to say. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, because if the Bengals win, then everybody's watching on Sunday to see how the other games play out. And I think of all of the games, that's the one that I think could be on Saturday.
If the Bengals win, though, then the Ravens have nothing to play for. And I don't know if the league wants that either on Sunday.
So if the Bengals win, the Ravens have nothing to play for?
Correct.
Oh. Bengals, Steelers, Chiefs, Broncos, and Jets, Dolphins look set for 4:25 is what Mike
Okay, you're getting this now?
Yeah, well, that's what Mike just texted us in the chat message here. So thank you, Mike, for sending that in the chat message.
All right, well, we haven't seen that yet. All right, real quick, before I head on out of here, let's talk about playoff possibilities and opponents. Here's the way it's going to work, folks, all right? This is what happens now. Let me just grab this to make sure I have this. I'm pretty sure this is right. Okay, we know this. If Denver wins, the Bills will play the Denver Broncos. If they beat the Chiefs next week, they are playing the Denver Broncos. That is the playoff game in 2 weeks, the Super Wild Card weekend. If Denver loses and Miami wins, it'll be the Miami Dolphins. Mm-hmm. If Denver loses, Miami loses, and Cincy wins, it'll be the Bengals. Mm-hmm. So if you're rooting for not to be the Bengals, those are the three things that have to happen for it to be the Bengals. It's got to be Denver loses, Miami loses, and the Bengals win. If Denver loses, Miami's the first team in if they can win. But if Denver wins, they get that spot. Whatever one of those teams that happens with, they're coming to Buffalo in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think that the podcast we do in the middle of the week will be about this. This week, it will not be about the Patriots because we have no idea what the game is going to look like. I think it'll be much more about who would you rather play? How do you approach the game as far as starters are concerned? Because I would imagine most Bills fans do not want to see the Bengals. And then I would bet it's a coin toss between who they would rather see between the Broncos and Dolphins. I feel like we actually might feel different about this. Who do you think the Bills would rather play?
Between what? Of the three?
Broncos and Dolphins. Between those two, who would they rather play? Okay, I agree. I agree. Broncos. I was gonna say I think they'd rather play the Broncos too.
Hey, Matt, I gotta jump off. I got a radio interview and gotta run to here.
Yeah, go do your radio interview. I'll wrap things up. Thanks, Sal. I'll talk to you soon. Yep. All right, everyone. You're stuck with me. How about this? Now we're going to talk all about Sal while he's gone and he can't say anything. I did say on Twitter that I was going to answer some questions. I will answer those solo. So if your question was for Sal, I do apologize. Catherine Fitzgerald asked, did you talk to Christian Benford about your fraternity? No, I did not, but I can assure you that I will in some capacity this week. Beaver tolls, flats, or drums? The answer to that is always drums, for sure. Ryan, Bills backups versus Pats contending for the number one pick. Do we see an over, under, below 40-35. Ooh, that's a good one. I would say we probably see like a 42.5 over under is my guess. Because, you know, I still think you're going to see Drake May trying to score points. And I think that that offense is at least capable. They were last week when they played against the Bills. I know they did nothing against the Chargers, but we shall see. Sabres fun stats. Are the Bills going to dress three quarterbacks next week? I think they will. My assumption is that they have one of their practice squad elevations be Mike White. I believe he has one left. And then probably what I think is going to happen is that Josh Allen starts, probably plays a series or two. Then it goes to Mitch Trubisky, and then maybe they have Mike White available as kind of his backup. We shall see. I think they'll start Josh Allen just because they want his start streak to continue. This is a question. Last time the Bills recorded a safety at home. It's a good question. I saw it was the first time the Bills have had a safety since 2022 with Ed Oliver. I just don't remember if it was at home. I don't think it was. I think it was in Detroit on Thanksgiving Day. So that was a long time ago. Let's see if there's any other ones. Is it a good thing or a bad thing that I haven't noticed Cole Bishop when he's played in? Well, that's a good question. You know, it's funny. I always talk about this. You know, obviously, a lot of you who are listening probably know that I covered hockey for a long time. You know, grew up, loved hockey more than anything. So I used to always hate when people would say it's a good thing when you don't notice a defenseman. And I feel a little bit about the same way here because I feel like a good one would be noticed for a lot of reasons, right? Like, I feel like, yeah, it's the title of the position is safety. It is the safety valve at the end of the defense to keep everything in front of you and make plays when you need to. But I do think that, you know, you want to see some splash plays. I feel like it's been equally good and bad. The only time I really remember him getting burned is that Houston game where Nico Collins just took the top off and it looked like there was some miscommunication. So I would say it's not a good thing or a bad thing. I would say you probably want to notice him a little bit more, but at the same time, hey, young player, if he's not making mistakes, that is certainly a good thing, and you want to be happy with that. Jimmy, has Allen done enough to win wrap-up MVP? It's Lamar or Barkley's if he breaks the record. I think Allen wins MVP. I really do. I just think he's been so good over the last several years that people will kind of give him the award, not out of, you know, like it's not deserving now, but because he should have won already, and this year has done so much with just not a lot around him, which I think is really, really impressive. Derek says, what did I get at Giancarlo's? So he must have known that I went out to dinner on Saturday and I got the Delmonico steak and it was delicious. So thank you. What is the story behind the Aaron Rodgers shove? In 2014, the Bills played the Packers in pregame. I was told to get video of James Starks. So I'm shooting the video of James Starks and all of a sudden I feel someone just like push me and tell me, you know, some words that I can't say on the podcast. I was like, I can't believe somebody just shoved me, but I had no idea who it was. One of the other photographers down on the field was like, hey, I just got video on my cell phone of Aaron Rodgers shoving some guy. I was like, I just got shoved by somebody. They sent me the video. Sure as heck, it was Aaron Rodgers shoving me. At the moment, I had no idea who it was. I just felt it and then heard something, and then I saw the video. So the fact that I have the video, shout out John Doss, the sports anchor in Cleveland, because he was the one who got the video, and it has become my bit for so long since then. So shout out John Doss for that reason. Bills Bengals would be the best game wild card weekend. What would that time slot be? That's from Jacob. I agree with you, Jacob. I think if it's Bills-Bengals, it's one of the night games, Saturday or Sunday. I could see it being a Saturday evening game or Sunday night football in wild card round. I mean, listen, it's Allen, it's Burrow. That one's a no-brainer. This is just a complete guess. My assumption is that if it's Bills-Broncos, it's probably an afternoon game, probably like Sunday afternoon. If it's Bills-Dolphins, maybe it's Saturday night or Sunday mid-afternoon. And then if it's Bills-Bengals, we probably see it in primetime on Sunday night. Will Tyrod Taylor ever be a legend of the game? I feel like he should. I mean, Tyrod Taylor was a very important piece and member of the Bills in ending the drought. And I do not think that that should be taken for granted. He played some really good seasons with the Bills. And just because he was never elite does not mean that people should look, you know, poorly on the years that he had in Buffalo, because I think he was a really good player when they went a long time without having anything at the quarterback position. This is going to be the last one that I there's two more here. Did Spencer Brown save the Sabres? No, because they just lost 13 games in a row. And for them to actually be in contention, they got to probably win like five or six more in a row. So good on them for responding with three straight wins. But until you streak together eight or nine wins, then you're still pretty much out of it because of the just disastrous 13 game losing streak that they had. And then this is the last one I'll answer. Is the defense good or bad? I think the defense... That's a really good question, and it's a really loaded question, because I think that they're closer. It's so hard. I feel like they're capable of making big splash plays, but they're not good enough to consistently get opposing teams off the field, and that's what scares me going into the postseason about the Bills defense. Now, I will say, I never have thought that they would win a Super Bowl because of their defense. I have thought if they're going to win, it's because of Josh Allen. But it puts even more pressure on the offense and Allen to be spectacular, because if there's a game where they're just not clicking or it takes too long to get to that point, it may become out of reach. So I would say the defense is fine. They've got a higher ceiling than they do floor, but I don't think they're spectacular. That's the one thing that's a bit concerning to me. And when you have a defensive-minded head coach, you would want the defense to be something you could always count on. And I don't know right now if I could say I can always count on the Bills defense. I don't feel that way. But, you know, like we've said about the offense, maybe they've got some things up their sleeve that we're not accounting for, that they are saving for the playoffs. That does not just have to be an offense thing where we talk about, well, the offense is keeping some things close to the vest for the playoffs. Maybe the defense is doing the same thing. Maybe Von Miller picks it up to another level once the games really start to matter. Maybe they've got some unique looks that they're going to do with their defensive line. I trust the cornerbacks. I trust the linebackers. I trust the safeties a bit. The defensive line, besides Greg Rousseau, is what scares me. So we shall see. But the Bills are the number two seed. It sounds like we should know the schedule for week 18 sometime soon. If you're watching this and it's already come out, I apologize. Thank you for watching. Bills, number two seed. They improved to 13-3 on the season. For the record, I picked them to go 10-7. So I am way off, and they have exceeded not only my expectations, but a lot of people's expectations. For this episode of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo, for Mike Robbie, for Sal Capaccio, I am Matt Bovee. Thanks for watching. We'll talk to you guys soon, and Happy New Year. If you are watching this in these next couple days, hope you have a lovely New Year's Eve and an even better 2025.